G'day team, hope this finds you well. This conversation is a recent recording I had with Mark Labusk, or a conversation I had with Mark Labusk from the Simply Practically Human podcast. We're doing a series of six talks on his show because we can, and because I'm super lazy and Melissa's in the hammock, we've decided to just share those on this platform as well, on the U Project, to do a co-share. So this is that conversation with Mark. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you're well. Love your guts. See you soon.
We're back again, Saturday morning. It's July the 10th, 8 a.m. I've got the amazing Craig Harper joining me. Craig, thanks for coming on board.
Thanks for having me, champion. I was just having a sip of tea. That's how casual we are here at the co-share that is you and me.
Absolutely. It's that casual that, you know, I liked it last week when you told me that I was your friend, and all week I've actually been going, do you reckon I can, am I allowed to call him Harps yet?
Yeah, look, maybe one more week, but don't get ahead of yourself.
All right, Craig, I'll keep it formal.
Mate, you can call me fucking shithead. You can call me whatever you want. Call me Harps, call me Craig. Just don't call me Mr. Harper. I went to a gym just up the road the other day, a little one from me, which there's a few gyms around here that kind of let me come in and out when I want, which is very nice of them.
Yeah.
And there was this young dude up there, and not that I'm anyone, but he knew who I was for some reason, and he's calling me Mr. Harper the whole time. And it fucking annoyed me. And he was being uber respectful, but, yeah, I'm like, Mr. Harper, come on, bro, call me Harps.
Now, listen, Harps, and now I want you to think about this. I want you to look through his eyes. He's actually – he's speaking and engaging with gym royalty.
Well
– that's what he might have been thinking.
Yeah, it's funny sometimes when, and I don't know exactly where this is, but if not the first, I was definitely one of the first people in Australia doing PT. I definitely owned the first PT center. And it's funny to think all those years ago, 31 years ago, when I opened that center to now, and it wouldn't, of course, it would have happened anyway and without Craig Harper, but of course. But it's interesting to look at, you know, this thing that was once upon a time a standalone space in Hampton Street, Hampton in Melbourne, basically one big room, and there were no qualifications, certifications, there was no insurance, there was no personal training industry, there was no respect, there was no understanding, and neither should there have been because it didn't exist.
Yep.
And now there's this, you know, this Goliath of a thing in the fitness industry called personal training. I think this is, I don't know where we're going today, by the way, but I'll just shut up after this. But what is interesting is think about not just, you know, personal training, which is a relatively new advent in the world of professions, but is it a profession? Eh. But all of the new industries and all of the new jobs and the professions that exist now that didn't.
Yep.
You know.
Absolutely.
Vlogger, V-L-O-G-G-E-R, and all of the tech jobs and programmers and code writers and SEO experts and, you know, online this and online that. Like the corporate and professional and work landscape looks nothing like it did even 30 years ago.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to continue to change at a rate of knots. It's interesting, mate, you talk about, I think you should with some pride think about that, the first PT studio set up, and maybe that's why old mate rolled out Mr. Harper, because he's like, this is the guy. He is the guy. And look, I've got, after this today, I've got a PT session at 9:30, and hello to Dean and Jacko at loading training up on top end of bloody Lygon Street. But mate, these guys, they are sports scientists, and they've gone and done all of that sort of stuff, and they put me through hell.
Mm.
But you know, they love what they do. And you know, the things I like, mate, they've just gone out on their own. I love people having a crack.
Yeah.
So and I think
what are their names again?
So it's Dean, Roger, yeah, and Jackson Cooper. And the business is called Loading Training, 457 Lygon Street, Brunswick East. And the good thing for me is I train like a fucking madman. And what they've taught me is you've got no mobility, mate.
Mm.
So half of your session is like poxy stretches that I hate. And then we do a few lifts. But what I've found in the last 4 weeks, guess what?
Your mobility is improving.
And I'm lifting better. So thank you, boys. Go easy. Hey, I got a T-shirt on that says the word humanovation on it. And I want to start here today because In my first book, I write about the fact that we've become human doings,
yep,
instead of human beings. Human beings have become human doings. And, you know, everyone I talk to, they can tell me about their to-do lists, and not only one to-do list for their work, but then they've got a to-do list for themselves and a to-do list for their mates and whatever else it might be. Humanovation, this, and I've seen this word around before, but I use it very deliberately to say it's about how you choose to be as a human rather than what you do. And doing stuff's important, I get that. But the question I ask people is, have you got a to-be list on how you're going to choose to be today or at any particular point of the day? And they look at me like I've got fucking two heads. My idea is this, is if we become clear about how we're going to choose to be, then the doing becomes more purposeful. So for today, for me, I know what I've got to do today: get up, jump on the podcast, make sure everything's set up, talk to you, finish this, go and do a PT session, might play me guitar later on, whatever it is I'm going to do. I know all that, but what am I going to choose as far as the way I turn up, the way I choose to be? For this today, for you, engaged, curious, I want to be a little bit surprised at times because I know you do that very well. But what if I came on and I'm like, oh, fuck, I can't be bothered with this. I'm going to just choose to, you know, I'm going to go back to the old Mark LeBosque. Well, that's not going to go down too well. My question to you to start with is, how do you make a choice on how you choose to be, or do you have a to-be list?
That's interesting. So what came up for me when you were saying all of that is self-awareness, awareness of how I am to me and how I am to others and for others, not in an insecure way, but literally in a self-awareness way. What is the Craig experience like? Good, bad, interesting, terrifying, curious, annoying, enjoyable. So the way that I am or the way that I'm being for myself and for others influences everything, because the way that I am or the way that I'm being determines how I interact with the world and the people in the world around me and how I make decisions and how I interpret all of those external inbound stimuli into my brain. So all of the things that are happening around me are processed within me. So how I am and what I want to be today for me is about, I want to be that person on an emotional, psychological, and behavioral level that aligns with what he actually says matters. In other words, his values.
Yep.
Why is he talking in the third person? That's very weird. Stop that. But, you know, to be able to, like, for me, it's really important that people like you and I and anyone who is in any position of authority, is not the right word, but leadership or recognition, or, you know, you've got an audience, you've got a platform, your audience and your platform and the attention is growing. And I think that is a real responsibility.
Yes.
And it's easy to jump on and go, because I can, so this is my self-awareness around behavior, communication, energy, and the way that I present myself to the world. So I know that I'm a skilled communicator, that I can be funny, that I can create connection and tell stories and be a bit cheeky, all of that, right? I'm not many good at many things, but communication is maybe the one thing that I'm not bad at, right? Now, I know that I can do that on a skill level, but that's just role-playing, really. That's persona, not person.
Yeah.
So for me, I am very interested in, most interested in whether or not I'm full of shit or I'm authentic, because I used to be, I didn't always walk my talk.
Yeah.
I wasn't always, you know, I wasn't telling people to, you know, eat chicken salad and then I was going home and snorting cocaine and mainlining heroin or eating, you know, bags of donuts. But I just wasn't really, I wasn't really representative. I knew what to do, but I didn't always do what I know. And yep. I still don't. I'm far from perfect. But for me, who I am being, my being list is about being aligned and being authentic. And that's an overused word, but it is a good word used the right way. And so that I am the same if people are looking or not, you know. And because I have so many interactions, you know, this week I'm doing 7 podcasts for mine and I've done another 5 interviews this week. That's 12 plus full-time work, full couple of speaking gigs, full-time study, all this stuff, which is all good. No one's making me do it. I'm very grateful. But one of the things I need to be careful of, Mark, being very busy, is that I don't treat people without the respect they deserve because I'm busy.
Yep. Yep.
And I'm important and I've got a profile.
Mm.
The moment I start doing that is, you know, I say to Melissa, who runs my life, if I do that, you know, punch me in the face, let me know.
We're going to get into busyness today as well. But just as you were speaking then, and you're talking about all the different things, I'm doing some interviews, I'm getting interviewed myself, my podcast, 7 episodes, I've got some study to do, I've got some gigs to speak at. I also look at it and say this self-awareness piece, which is important, is your ability in a moment to practice what I call the 2 A's, which is awareness and then adjustment. And maybe you've got to adjust slightly how you choose to be in each of those environments. It doesn't mean you lose your authenticity, but it's like, you know what? When I'm about to do the podcast, I'm gonna have to be a bit like this. And when I'm doing the speaking gig, I'm going to be a bit of this. And then I've got to study. And so how do you practice these 2 A's? It's like, right, I'm aware right now of what's going on. I have to adjust slightly. How do you build that, I guess, that ability to change how you choose to be ever so slightly in the moment or in the environment, if you do?
That's really smart question. That's a really smart question. And so what you are talking about here is social intelligence.
Yep.
Because I don't know what's coming, I'm not prepared. So I have my own notepad here, everyone. If you're wondering, why is he pausing a bit? Because I literally write notes while we talk. So social intelligence, situational awareness, all part of my PhD research, by the way, empathy, which kind of intersects with emotional intelligence. They're probably, they're the ones that come to mind for me anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is a fucking smart question, mate. And I tell you why, because that question, understanding that question and then knowing what to do with that really matters. So if you and I are sitting at the cafe and you're talking to me about, you know, and you're a 50-ish year old dude, you're talking to me about a few challenges. And the challenges might be, let's just go really broad, I'm struggling a bit with my mental health, or I'm a bit flat, or I have peaks and troughs, or I feel a bit dejected or a bit lost, all that kind of normal human stuff that most of us feel at some stage. The way that I might talk to you about that would be quite different to how I might talk to, say, a 22-year-old female.
Yep.
Or even a 22-year-old male. Probably gender doesn't matter. Even if we're talking about the same stuff, because I know, and also because I have a pre-existing relationship with you. And it's not that I'm compromising my truth or what I believe. I'm actually being intelligent in the moment and adapting the way that I share those thoughts and ideas. With the agenda, I do have an agenda. The agenda is connection.
Yeah.
The agenda is emotional and social synergy, right? So knowing how to share thoughts and ideas and messages, what is the best model, is paramount, because you think of what you do. So in your normal work, in your podcasting, in your coaching, in even when you go to be trained by your boys today, everything that we do, nearly everything that we do in life, especially on a social level or an interactive level, ultimately comes back to our ability to connect and communicate and understand and be understood.
Yeah.
Now, if Craig Harper stands in front of an audience and he can't read the audience or understand the audience or connect with the audience, then it doesn't matter how informed or insightful or true his message is, he's not doing a good job. And there's no value in the words. And it's not because the words are not relevant or insightful. It's because I'm speaking German and everyone in the audience speaks English.
Yeah. Yep.
And this is my... I learned this, and I'll shut up after this, but you'll find this interesting. I started working in a rehab. I was the director of health and wellness for a drug, alcohol, and addiction treatment center for a few years, and just very part-time. But I'd go in there every week and see the boys and girls. And I would say for about the first 3 to 4 months of my role in there, I was somewhere between poor and shit. And it wasn't because I didn't understand humans or human behavior or even the theory of addiction, right? What I didn't understand was addicts, because yep. I've never had a drink. I've never been drunk. I've never smoked. I've never used drugs. In terms of addiction, I was the theory guy.
Okay, yep.
Now, life's not a theory and addiction's not a theory. So as soon as I got to understand the people, then I began to speak their language and then I created connection.
I like that. And thanks for the acknowledgement of the fucking good question, because I do try and ask good questions. And when someone like you says that's a good one, because you get asked hundreds of questions, I'm rapt to hear that. Hey, so something I want people to think about here, those that are listening, is do you practice the two A's? Are you aware in that moment and can you adjust? And I think, you know, you talk a lot about self-awareness. I think this is such an important thing for human beings to tap into. But now I'm going to just move us a little bit onto that B word that you mentioned. One of the reasons that we don't practice self-awareness well is we're just too busy. So, you know, how you going, Arps?
Oh, busy.
How you going, Mark? Busy. And even sometimes, you see people walking around practicing busyness. So what they'll do is it'll be the phone sort of wedged on their shoulder, up to their ear. They'll have a folder in their hand. They'll acknowledge you as they walk past. And people say to me all the time, you must be really busy, Mark. And here's what I say to them today, and it absolutely throws them. I go, no, I'm productive. And they fucking look at me like, what's wrong with you? You haven't actually responded in the way that you're supposed to, because we're all busy now. I'm flat out, I'm busy. Mm. And I'm not trying to downplay this, because we are in a certain way, but why is busyness such a badge of honor today? What are your thoughts around busyness?
Also another good question. So I think we value, you know, for whatever reason, I haven't thought deeply about why it's such a badge, but it definitely is a badge. I think because in our culture anyway, well, at least in, you know, corporate Australia, that seems to be one of the metrics of success, and we want to be seen to be successful. Like, if I'm not busy, well, shit, I must not be successful. Whereas I think if I'm not busy, I'm doing great.
Yep.
Right? You know, it's just one of those things that is, you know, because of the way that we assess success and accomplishment in our culture, there seems to be sociologically and anecdotally a strong correlation with what we think success is and how busy we perceive someone to be. And none of us want to look like we're not successful. And we also, I think, feel guilty because we've been programmed this way. Again, this is pure speculation. I think we feel guilty to go, I'm doing fuck all today. Like, yep. We feel obligated to go, I've got 7 podcasts this week. I'm Craig Harper. I'm very busy. Well, fucking do nothing one day, you dickhead, and just embrace it. You know, like, I think non-busyness is a goal.
Yeah.
You know, I interviewed the guy who, Mark Randolph, his name is, he started Netflix. He created Netflix.
Yep.
So, you know, just a shit kicker. God bless him. No, amazing man, amazing man. And what was interesting, you know, I've interviewed a fair few famous-ish people, and, you know, some of them are great. Some of them are hard work. Some of them very happy with themselves. But what I loved about him was his philosophy, like, success for him is not about money, is ironically not about money, not about brand, not about, and of course all of those things matter. And we're not suggesting don't make money, or making money is bad, or building a business or becoming a billionaire is bad. But it's, you know, if you're financially loaded but spiritually, mentally, emotionally bankrupt, I would suggest that perhaps you're not wealthy. But that's just my paradigm. But he works 2 days a week,
yep,
like crazy. He's still youngish. He's still in his late 50s, maybe he's 60, 61. Sharp as a tack, physically, mentally, emotionally, like a great 40-year-old, I would say. Super, super into physical, mental, emotional health. He works 2 days a week. It's all he works. And he has 5 days a week. And he spends that time, the rest of his time, between creative stuff, spending time with his family, and what he calls adventure. So you think about that. He doesn't work 5 days a week. you know, you times that by 52 weeks. My maths is, I think that's 260 days a year where he's not working. You chuck in holidays. It's probably close to 280 or 90 days a year where he actually doesn't do work. And when I say he doesn't work, he doesn't look at his computer. He doesn't answer an email. He doesn't take calls. Like, he literally does zero work 5 days a week.
Yep.
And we were talking to him about this readjusted paradigm of what is success and what is effective and what works. But you and I have grown up in a model that, and again, I'm generalizing, so if what I'm saying doesn't resonate to you, I understand. But you and I, for the most part, have grown up in a paradigm that says, okay, you get a job, then you work like fuck till you're, I don't know, 55, 60, 5 days a week. You have 4 weeks holiday a year. You start at 8, 9-ish. You finish at 5, 5:30. And again, we know there's a lot of variability around this. You get married, you have 2.3 kids, you have a dog, you have a picket fence, maybe a station wagon. Then when you're nearly fucking dead, you retire and the good stuff comes.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, for me, that whole kind of thinking around busyness and typical kind of work span is fundamentally flawed. And I think as individuals, you, me, our listeners get to choose, well, what will my busy look like? And also the kind of busy matters too. Not just busy, busy, but what if it's busy fun? Like, I'm busy, but my busy is not attached to anxiety or stress. My busy is attached to growth and joy and fun.
I like that idea. Thanks, mate. That work till you're 50 and have all those things, the 2.3 kids and all the other bits and pieces. I often say to people that, you know, we spend so much time in the work stuff to get ourselves materially set up, whatever we want to be. And then I say to them, what do? We go and buy a fucking caravan, go around Australia, come home and die. You know, people have got to start to be thinking about when you're about to tell someone you're busy, let's go back to self-awareness and the two A's, maybe just stop for a microsecond and go, is that a useful word for me to be using right now? I know when I go back to the corporate world that if I didn't get invited to, I remember one time there was like a leadership offsite for 50 people going to it, and I must have been 51st. So I'm on the fucking wait list. And I cracked the shits in a big way, like you wouldn't believe. It's like spat the dummy out, chucked the toys out of the cot, because really what it was for me is that busyness and being invited to that, to go to those 2 or 3 days, was success. If you're not there, you're not one of the crew. But then I got towards the end of my career in the corporate, and then people would say, we've got a meeting, and I'm like, what are we doing? Are we sharing information that we could have shared beforehand, or are we making decisions? Oh, you know, we're coming together. I'm not coming. Yeah, but we need you there. Why? And then people are like, well, you don't fit in. But I got to the point where for me, busyness and fitting in, and I think there was also, because, you know, restructures, redundancies and things, there's a massive fear that if I'm not there and things go well, maybe they don't need me anymore. So there's something going on for people to start to think, what if I'm busy having busy fun rather than busy, crazy, out of control type stuff? So I think people need to think about it. And then into fear. When we first spoke in that first podcast you came on, I loved it when you talked about getting in the ring, facing into your fears. You know, people say to you, I have a fear of public speaking. How do I get better? And you said, by more public speaking. Let's start to then move into this space now. I've got written down here the benefits of being shit scared. And I'm going to call it this as well, the ability to sit in your catastrophe for a period of time. Now, I think you speak absolute sense on this topic. So maybe in context of, you know, Mark decides to leave the corporate world and set up his own business, and he is absolutely shit scared. What are the benefits for me 7 years ago to do that? What would be the benefits for someone listening today who's teetering on the edge of moving out into that space? What are your thoughts around that?
There are lots of ways we could go with this, but I'll just start with, so generally speaking, you know, so we associate fear with discomfort, emotional, psychological discomfort, perhaps financial discomfort or risk, perhaps personal or professional discomfort, whatever that represents. But also we know when we do something that, and we're not talking about stepping into fear in a reckless, I don't care for my safety way. We're not talking about that. We're talking about intelligent, facing fears intelligently, methodically, strategically. When we face our fears and we work through them, what happens is, one, we generally don't die. The vast majority of the times we don't die on any level, metaphorically or literally, but also what happens is we build strength and we build awareness and we build insight and skill and resilience and understanding. And in other words, we make ourselves more capable of dealing with the hard stuff, the scary stuff. And, you know, being fearful is not bad. I'm fearful. I'm scared of lots of things, my mum being one of them. Yep. She's fucking terrifying. But, you know, being scared is not bad. It's not weak. It's not flawed. It's human. Being courageous is, and this is a cliche and we all know what I'm going to say, but being courageous is literally, can I do what I'm required to do to create the outcome I want to create, even though the process scares me? And I think I don't try to coerce anyone to go and do what I say. Look, you know, the thing is, shit is going to scare you because you're human, not broken, not flawed, not bad human. And you need to do a cost-benefit analysis and you need to weigh it. Well, you don't need to do anything, but I suggest you weigh it up and you go, is this important enough to me? Does this matter enough? Do I want this thing enough to go and step into my fear and be uncomfortable and be vulnerable and take a risk? Because not only on two levels we change the reality of our external world, or now I have a new business, now I have an online whatever, or now I'm in shape, or now I'm a bloody blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, even though I didn't want to, I kind of was terrified to go to the dojo, or now whatever it is, right? There's the practical, physical, observable outcome, and then there's the who we become in the middle of it.
Yep.
And I've said many times on podcasts, I'm not super smart. I'm not being falsely humble. I'm not. I'm rock solid average. I'm average intelligence. I'm average everything. I don't excel at anything athletically, genetically, sociologically, everything kind of right in the middle. But what I'm good at, which is optional, is putting myself in growth situations. And this is what I love about this message, is because you don't need to be special to do that.
Yeah.
You don't need to be gifted. You don't need a degree. You don't need a fucking cheer squad. You don't need it to be sunny. You don't need optimal conditions. You just need to make a choice. And the choice is, I'm going to go where I grow.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do the thing that most people, and I don't need a fucking cheer squad. I don't need a fan club. I don't need a medal. I don't need a participation trophy. I don't need anything. All I need to do is be ready. And the truth is that, you know, the theory of personal transformation and growth, which is what your show and my show is about, really, we're talking about doing, thinking, being, creating better, but it's just blokes sharing words.
Yeah.
And what the value in your words or my words or our shows, the value is hopefully people get a bit of a distraction and have some interest and have an enjoyable hour or whatever it is. But hopefully, and more importantly, off the back of these theories that we are sharing and exploring, that some action happens that impacts their world and life in a positive way.
Yeah.
And I know that's long-winded, but fear is an inevitable part of being human. And if you don't manage it, it will manage you. And if it is managing you, the quality of your life will be, for want of a less academic word, dog shit.
Yeah. As you were speaking then, I was in my mind, I was being drawn back into, it took me near on 12 months after I started my business to finally have the guts and get out of my shit scaredness to run my two-day program, because it was like, it's not quite right. It's not quite right. I don't think it's going to be good enough. And then I ran it and I was like, that was okay. And then I ran another one and like, I look back now and I think they were fucking horrible when I started, but they're better now. What comes to mind for me is, I think that I was chasing or pursuing some sort of perfection here, that I needed to be perfect straight away. And sometimes when I coach people, they set such high expectations on themselves straight away. And I sort of say to them, why don't you slice it up into little chunks of, and acknowledge when you do well and then go to the next step, but don't be always thinking about, I need to be as good as Mark or Craig. How do you help people to maybe not get caught up in perfection, but be able to break it down into chunks and acknowledge the good that they do as they go along, or the success that they have?
Well, sadly, we live in a little bit of a perfection culture, or we're obsessed with what we perceive to be perfection, but it's really, it's a myth, you know. So I think accepting that where I am and what I'm doing will probably never be perfect, but it might be better than what I did yesterday. So my goal is better. My goal is growth and learning. And I have that all the time. I mean, when COVID, you know, landed, I had about 10 minutes from here, I had, which I don't have anymore because I got rid of it because of COVID, I have an office space where Melissa was based and a 40-seat lecture theatre where I stopped doing one-on-one and two-on-one coaching a while ago, and I started doing kind of 40-on-one mentoring groups. And the good and bad of that is, well, 40 people's much more doable than one-on-one, or it's much more practical for my time and all that. But the downside is that I've got listeners and followers and friends all over the world, and unless you live within 30 minutes of that venue, you're probably not going to come.
Yep.
Understandably. But then when, you know, COVID happened and Melissa said, why don't we do a mentoring? And this is no revelation, but why don't we do, you know, mentoring online? And I'd used Zoom about 3 times in my life. I'm like, oh, how would that work? And blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, and I was fearful. I was uncomfortable. And now I wasn't fearful or uncomfortable because there was no potential in it. I was fearful and uncomfortable because I felt somewhat underqualified and inept to yep. use that medium because I had no skill in it. And it wasn't actually about the potential of the idea of Melissa's or the scope for building online connection and programs. It was about my own insecurity, of which there is still plenty. So we launched the first one about 4 weeks after that idea, and we had 330 people in the first 12-week mentoring program. And it was somewhere between fine and good.
Yeah.
And we had people from 12 countries, and I'm like, oh, so this is a thing, and why the fuck have I not been doing this before? And the reason I hadn't been doing it earlier really was probably fear, and was probably my own apprehension around, you know, my ignorance really. Yeah. Melissa, who's 32 and, you know, has got a double degree in psychology and business, much smarter than me, understands the potential of all of this, but because I'm a fucking relic, my relicness and my ignorance and my fear was getting in the way. But you got to see, the thing is with all of this, mate, I think what is really important, not that we're beating ourselves up, but you got to be real and honest, and you got to go, yeah, I was the problem there, because that potential was always there to have people from all over the world come into my mentoring groups if we do it in a different way.
Yeah.
But, you know, this addiction to perfection, that will actually take you backwards, ironically, because you're never going to do anything unless you think it's going to be perfect, which means you're going to try less stuff, do less stuff, and you're actually going to have less growth and less development.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, do I do things that don't work? Of course. Do I do things that are shit? Of course. And you go, well, that was shit. What can I learn? That was shit. How can I do it next time so it's not shit? That was shit. What did I do wrong? Like, it's about curiosity and growth. You know, it's not about I need universal approval or improvement or acceptance. I just need to do my best and then see what happens. And I've never perfected fucking anything.
Yep.
So that's not even on my maybe list.
Thanks for sharing that. You know, the least amount of times you try things, the least amount of opportunity you have for growth is something I picked up. But I wanted to just follow this on with, when you were talking about, you know, going into this new mentoring piece, and it's like, you know, there was this bit of a story of, you know, am I going to be good enough, or whatever it was that you sort of said there. And I sort of relate to those as what I call a stop story, as in it stops us in our tracks. Fuck, I better not do this because I'm going to be shit at it, so I won't do it. I have a stop story with my work, which is I'm just lucky And we all know what happens to people's luck at some point in time. The old saying is, my luck's going to run out. And so, for instance, if I think about you and me, I'm lucky that my daughter's boyfriend put me onto your podcast. And I'm lucky that, you know, they got together 3 or 4 years ago and all of these lucky things. And I'm lucky that I reached out to you and you accepted my LinkedIn connection. Then I'm lucky that you did this and I'm lucky and I'm lucky and I'm lucky. And what happens to me is I hear this voice that goes, mate, your luck's going to run out very soon. And when that does, you're fucked. Because you're going to, whether it's your business, people are going to stop using you and then you've got to pay your mortgage and all, and it spirals into this thing. Now, what happens perhaps is people say to me, oh, no, you're not lucky, Mark. You just fucking work hard and you're good at what you do. And then my response to them is this. Can you just let me sit in my catastrophe for a little bit of time? Because if I don't sit in my catastrophe and you continue to rescue me, and I know that they have good intention when they do it, I think it stifles my ability to feel it and then grow from it. Advice for people who are rescuers, and I know they do it with good intention, but and I'm sure people will be listening going, that's me, I'm a rescuer. What advice would you give to rescuers who are trying to pull people out of these stories quicker than they should?
All right, so I'm going to come back to that. I'll circle around. If cool. I forget, remind me, ask me that again. But the first thing I'm going to say is this. So you were talking about how lucky, and by the way, I don't think you are, but I appreciate the flattery and the compliment, right? But so you reached out to me. Well, firstly, a lot of people wouldn't reach out because they're scared. So you took a risk because I could say no or ignore you. By the way, this is not an open invitation for everyone to reach out. I do love you though, a bit busy right now. But you reached out and I had a quick squiz at your stuff and I went, yep, let's do a podcast. Then you came on the podcast or you got me on your show and we had a chat and you were well prepared. That's not luck. You were quite thoughtful and clever. That's not luck. You asked good questions. That's not luck. You were engaging, you created a good experience, and I liked you. That's not luck. All of that is you, right? Somebody else could have had all of those lucky things happen, as is often the case, and I couldn't have gotten off the podcast fast enough and never want to saw you or heard from you again.
Yep.
So the reason that we're doing this is because, or part of it is because, well, one, because of the shit I just said, but two, I love helping people and I love helping people that I believe have really got something to share and give and offer the world. And to then, I love coaching. You're already doing it, right? So you don't need me, but I can open a door a little bit wider than you can right now because I've got more leverage and attention right now than you have. Not a good thing, bad thing. It's just how it is, right?
Yeah.
So I heard in your intro something like, so this guy's got kind of about 10,000 listeners a day and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I can't remember your number, but at the time it was very small-ish comparatively, still doing better than lots. And I went, that surprises me because that guy is more talented than that number, right? I've spoken to lots of podcasters, you're better than that number. So when I thought that, I just put that in the back burner in the back of my brain and I thought, sometimes I meet people and I could give you 30 stories and I go, wow, this person's a talent or this person's got potential or this person's, for what they have going on, there's a lot of room for them to do more stuff. And then I was talking to, you know, the girls, Tiff and Melissa, who work for me and, you know, there is a lot going on. And then you came up, you floated in, you slid sideways into my consciousness like Tom Cruise in Risky Business in socks. And I thought maybe Mark and I could do something where it's win-win. And so the idea was, let's do a short series of these, which we're doing. And this is what I think people should think about all the time. How can I build win-win relationships with people?
Yeah.
So what you're getting is a guy with a bit of a profile who will steer people towards you. Hopefully your numbers will grow. Hopefully what you're getting is a good conversation. So you've got maybe 5 or 6 more conversations that are going to go up on your platform, which hopefully people will enjoy and share and, you know, talk about. But all of that came because you were good. you know, not because you're fucking lucky, not at all, but you created the opportunity. And most people won't create the opportunity. Now, to your question, rescuers, I think, let's talk in general terms. Let's not talk about people who are in dire situations, like people who are at the very, 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 very bottom ladder of addiction, for example, and it's life and death.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I could have this conversation a few ways. But let's just talk about general people who feel like they can go and help someone. It comes down to a few things, but probably the most important thing is, does this person want my help?
Yeah. Yep.
Does this person want my help? And I've had this many times. And you'll, here's a really easy no-brainer to understand. So because of my background, my understanding of training is I would say, without being a dickhead, elite.
Yes.
I've worked with elite teams and athletes and Olympians. And so I'm not great at many things, as I said before, but that's something I'm pretty good at. So when I travel around the country speaking, I train in different gyms all the time. And every now and then I'll literally see somebody who's doing something that, if not today, pretty soon they are going to fuck themselves up doing what they're doing the way they're doing it. And I never give people advice they haven't asked for or haven't opted to listen to, like this podcast, people are choosing to listen.
Yes. Yep.
But every now and then I think if somebody's perhaps in danger, I will say something. So I don't know how many times I have, not too many, but maybe 50 times over, you know, 30 years, I've gone up to someone and said, you know, I don't at all mean to be rude, but can I suggest this, that? And I'd say half the time they tell me to fuck off. Now, I'm actually coming from a good place. My intention is to help them not get injured.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'm also aware that I'm not surprised when they tell me to fuck off, either literally or essentially. The amount of people who are very happy is few.
Yeah.
Or appreciative. And I get that. And, you know, so I wrote in my, I can't remember which book, but one of my books I wrote about the fact that my mum, God bless her, she smoked till she was about 50. And from when I understood what smoking did, which was probably 10, I basically begged my mum to stop smoking. And then when I became a fitness industry professional, of course, then I was a genius and a guru. So then I had evidence and data. Well, I'd present the evidence and data and papers and, you know, that was worse. So all that happened was, so I loved my mum. I didn't want her to get lung cancer. All I wanted was her to be healthy. That was my only intention, to make her live longer and live better. But even from her own son, because my mum, one, didn't want to stop smoking, didn't want to listen to me, didn't ask for advice, and resented me trying to manipulate her behavior.
Yeah.
All I created with my mum that I loved with my well-intended message was disconnection and resentment.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
So open your eyes.
Yeah, no, I get that. That's really interesting. Like, if they don't want to be helped, well, they might tell you to fuck off. I really like that. I just want people to start to think before they jump in really quickly. Sometimes we need to sit there. We go back to connection from last week. My mum smoked from when she was about 11 until she was sort of early 50s.
That's hardcore. Well, that's mate, fucking.
But they were pretty hardcore in Mildura, apparently, mate. Down on by the Murray River, they'd be out there chuffing away at, you know, as teenagers. But I remember as a kid, mate, her driving around in her Volkswagen with us with the windows up in the middle of summer, and she's having a dart.
Yeah, of course.
We're sitting in the car, and I can still feel that right now, how, oh, geez, I can't really breathe. And, you know, for a long time, we would say to her, you should stop smoking, but she wasn't ready to stop smoking. An interesting connection there again. Hey, we talked about who inspired us last week. I wanted to throw another question up, because what I want to continue our listeners to understand is, as we keep talking to each other, we build more connection by getting curious and asking questions. I'm a bit scared with this one, because I was going to go down the path of a life-changing moment, but is that a bit deep?
No, I mean, I think whether or not it's a life-changing moment or it's a life-influencing moment on a big level, but I think life-changing moments we create, as in my life changed the moment I made a decision and subsequently changed my behavior. That's when my life started to change.
Yep.
But I think we have moments in time that can lead to those life-changing decisions and operating system changes, right? And I think everyone, there's a good book called The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, it is. Yep. Yeah, great book.
And I talk about this thing called an emotional or a psychological tipping point where something happens, might be an experience, might be an event, might be an observation. It could be a dream. It could be anything, but it's something that flicks a switch in your psyche where you go, nah, that's it. I'm not doing it. Yep. I'm not doing it, or I am doing it. I'm in. And it's like when people who have tried to give up smoking 37 times or change their diet 114 times or lose weight or but something profound happens and now they just do it. And they just do it and they keep it done. And what is interesting is when people have near-death experiences often, and I've worked with many people who have had massive, massive moments in time, you might call them sometimes catastrophes in their life. And after that catastrophe, their thinking and their behaving and their outlook is profoundly different.
Yep.
And now they don't waste time, they don't waste talent, they don't waste opportunities, they don't waste resources. And the reason that now they're innately more productive and effective and proactive is because their internal reality has shifted by this experience.
Yeah.
We all know of people who've had real tough things happen and go and do fucking amazing things, you know, become Paralympians and climb Everest and start businesses and become world renowned, this or that. But I always say to people, isn't it a pity that we wait for the catastrophe?
Yeah. Yep.
Because everything you need to succeed, you have. Mm. Now, not at everything, doesn't matter how much I want, I'm never going to be a world famous singer because I sing like dog shit. So there are limitations, but I would say it's almost universally true that everyone has more in them than they're currently tapping into.
So just one thing there. So you don't sing like dog shit because I've heard you a couple of times on your podcast and it's sort of like a bit of an Elvis-y type thing meets Roy Orbison. There's something there that I actually think that I think you'll be on stage singing at some point in time. I'm not quite sure it's going to be one of those talent shows, but your voice came up pretty well. But maybe the thing I've heard you talk about before, Arps, is that 14-year-old who went for the run.
Mm.
Was that one of those moments in your life where you made that decision that this has to change, something's got to change? Was that a big moment for you?
Yeah. So I had an event which I won't bore with everyone with for the 1,000th time, but it was the Year 8 swimming sports, which for me was a catalyst to reevaluate. I mean, obviously when you're 14, you don't think like this, but that was a moment in time where essentially I went, wow, I never want to feel like that or experience that again. How do I make that happen? And the only answer was, well, I need to change my body, the way I look, the way I feel, the way I function, what I weigh. And in one day, I changed almost everything about how I managed my body.
Yep.
I literally halved my food, not kind of, I literally. So whatever I would eat normally for breakfast, I ate half, lunch, I ate half, dinner, I ate half. That was how I started. Of course, I didn't know what I was doing. It was all, you know, guessing. I started to jog, walk more. And then I eventually ended up just jogging. And then I eventually ended up jogging, running. Then I eventually ended up running, jogging, then running and doing body weight stuff. But it was all because I had an experience that opened a door to my potential.
Yeah.
And that opened a door for me to tap into my potential. And I think I am a strong believer in that most people are wasting a lot of their talent and time and energy and resources in terms of what is possible for them. Mm. Now, if someone listening to this is saying, well, for the most part, I'm happy and content, then I'm saying, great, don't change anything. Don't change anything. But if you feel frustrated or you feel like you haven't scraped the surface of what's possible or you feel like there's more for you or you would love to explore you know, what might be for you physically, mentally, emotionally, professionally, personally, you know, then there's going to be a requirement of discomfort and effort and courage and self-control and discipline. And none of those things are sexy, but they're the things that work.
No, I like it. That idea of we wait for an event, it's an interesting one for me. And a bit of a note here, this might trigger a few people, but my old man committed suicide 18 years ago. Mm. And he'd had a slight stroke and he was very independent. He was a builder and a brilliant builder, but he'd sort of half retired doing a few renos and things at early 60s and had this stroke where you can't really, there's no physical, you can't see anything. It's not like he's, you know, limping or anything like that, or he can still move, but he's literally numb down one side of his body.
Right.
So it takes him from independent Bob to dependent Bob, and that crueled him. So he has an attempt at taking his life and he doesn't get there. So, but he leaves a note that says, I don't belong anymore. I'm a burden. And you know, that for me was like, fucking hell, belonging. And this is how quickly things can change when someone loses that sense of interdependence and or independence, sorry. And we sat down as a family after he'd been off to Castlemaine to do some, he did some work in a psych ward there, and he sat down, he said he'd never do it again. And it was interesting because everyone sort of said, yeah, good on your dad or good on your whoever, brother, partner. And I'm like, no, you will, because you're a fucking perfectionist. And sure enough, 6 months later, he used another method and he succeeded. And a couple of things happened for me, and it sort of brought me into my work today, is this idea that there's not a big difference between belonging, feeling like you're belonging, and feeling like you're a burden. Mm. And what can I do? What could I do to start to, I couldn't make people feel like they belong, but what could I start to do to be more aware that it doesn't take much to change things? So for me, that really drives my work today, which is all about connection and really belonging.
Mm.
But, you know, before that, I could sort of say I didn't give a lot of fucks about that, mate.
Mm.
And then you said before it takes an event, and I wonder what it was before that that had me to the point where it didn't really matter. Maybe it was more about my success and how I looked and thinking about other people. So, yeah.
Yeah, mate, thank you for sharing that. That's very vulnerable and I appreciate it. And, it is interesting because we, and I know we're probably nearly out of time, but we grow up, most of us, again, I'm generalizing, in a paradigm or a thought bubble that says success is about stuff. Success is about what you have and what you earn and what you own and where you live and what you drive and what people think of you, you know, and your bank balance and your credentials and all that stuff. And again, of course, there's nothing wrong with those things. But what happens when we get those things and then we go, it's not it. Maybe I need a bigger bank balance or a better car or a bigger house or a better, and then we get that and we go, that's not it either. And then what interests me is the, that's not it. What's not it? Like, what did you think? Because this was me, by the way, this is not judgy. This is me. Like I was, you know, I wasn't Bill Gates, but by the time I was 30, I was way more successful than I ever thought I would be. I had multiple business. I had 100 staff. My life was crazy when I was 30, 31, 32 compared to where I ever thought I would be. And in the middle of my really good income and my brand and my businesses and all of this stuff, the internal was not matched by the external.
Yep.
You know, from the outside looking in, my life was all shiny and awesome. It was Hollywood, but the inside out was not the same experience. And this is probably for another day, but we are taught and told and trained that it's all about the external, whereas I believe true success is an inside-out job.
Yep.
It's about, I want to know what's going on inside. I don't give a fuck about your biceps or your fucking, your pretty face or your handsome face or your car or what people think of you. I don't care about all the external shit. Tell me about what's happening internally because that's where you live. Like the external stuff is just where you do life.
Yep.
That's where life happens, but where you live is in that inner space.
Mm.
And that's the neglected space. And maybe we'll go there next time.
Absolutely. So just wrapping it up. So one of the things as you're talking, I'm thinking, why did it take an event? Because I was spending more time in the doing than the being, no doubt. I was being busy and I was thinking more about myself. Mate, we're done.
Awesome, son. Well, you've got about 30 minutes to get your bloody tutu and your Reeboks on and your leg warmers so you can go and see your mates and lift some shits and get some mobility in that rickety old body of yours.
Thank you, mate. We'll catch up again next week. Thanks, Harps.
See you, mate.